On this episode of Football 301, Matt Harmon joins me to do a little coaching carousel check-in. We got Ben Johnson to the Bears, Mike Vrabel to the Patriots. We got some assistant coaching hires, the ramifications of that, how the fits look, and also a little wrap-up of all the openings that we still have. Interviews, thoughts on those. Really fun show. See you guys in a sec. Welcome back to Football 301. I'm your host, Nate Tice. Got a little coaching carousel news today. We had a couple hires in the NFL, not just head coach, some assistants. We got rumors for some jobs. So today we're going to review some of the new hires, review what they mean for each team. Also look at some of the assistant coaching hires that and the impact that they have on the personnel for those teams and go over, maybe rank those remaining openings that we have in the NFL still. Somehow, some way near the end of January, we still have what? A half dozen teams. We have five teams with openings still. Yeah, that's how the NFL works. That's why there's always juicy news. Even if not talking about the games, we still have plenty of information here on Football 301 to help me do that, to help me go over these teams, to help me go over the new coaching hires. My guy, Mr. Matt Harmon. How are you doing today, Matt?
Nate, I'm doing fantastic. Coming off a banger week of football, weekend of football. It was fantastic. Divisional round delivered. It was great. A lot of stuff to chew on still from there. But a lot of it's going to come up with one particular hiring that we go over today. But I love this stuff. I love talking about coaching. I love talking about, potentially how these guys are going to redesign their systems and things like that to fit the personnel, or whether they're not going to do that. A lot of things to get into here.
Yeah. And I mean, we'll start off with probably one of the biggest dominoes to fall in the NFL. And it's the hot coaching name. I mean, really, it feels like for 24 months now, for a while now, I'll say 18 months, is Ben Johnson going to the Bears. Ben Johnson was the Lions offensive coordinator the last few years, replaced Anthony Lynn in Dan Campbell's first year as a head coach. A lot of people forget that. A lot of people forget the Archie Cunningham kind of thing here. We're going to shove this guy in and we're going to recast the offensive coordinator hire here. But we're going to go over Ben Johnson, the other hires that fit, why they were hired, how we got here, and what the success looked like early on in their 10 years. So starting with Johnson to the Bears, I think this was the biggest get. This was the biggest fish to get for a lot of teams competing to go after him. He did not go with the Raiders and did not fall for the Tom Brady siren song as much as we were hearing about that. I'm not that shocked, even though I was kind of like, oh, this is interesting, because the whole time we heard Ben Johnson was really worried about the quarterback and that he was only going to places with quarterbacks. And to me, that really narrowed down to Patriots, Bears, Jaguars in some way, shape, or form. Patriots got off with Mike Vrabel. We'll talk about that in a sec. Ben Johnson to the Bears, though, Matt, what do you think about this on first blush? Why do you think this is a good fit, bad fit, or an interesting fit for the Bears?
Well, yeah, first of all, with the Raiders stuff, I'm like 90% confident it was all just like some Tom Brady driven marketing scam by the Raiders and maybe other members of the media and things like that. Because forget quarterback on the roster that you're taking over. How about the quarterback in the division that you're going to be walking uphill in the mud for the rest of time? I that doesn't sound that appealing to me. And obviously, the NFC North is stacked. You know, the Bears are the only team, theoretically, right? The Bears are the only team that did not make the playoffs from this division. So this isn't some, he's going to be coasting in this division for the next few years or whatever. You got Matt LaFleur, you got your guy Dan Campbell, and you've got Kevin O'Connell there. That is not exactly just like a breeze to get through every single year. So it's not as if he's taken the easy way out with this job either, but I think this is a huge coup for Chicago. Obviously, we don't know what Johnson's going to be as a head coach. We don't know that. There's no proof of concept, of course, but you can say that with almost any of these guys other than the retreads. And sometimes when you have proof of concept, it isn't always that good. So there's plenty of unanswered questions. It's just impossible to know. We're generally not that good at deciding who is going to be a good head coach and who is going to be a bad head coach. So with all that caveats laid out there, this is the guy you kind of had to get almost, because it is just been a series of offensive ineptitudes in Chicago for not just years and years, but decades and decades. Ben Johnson gives you a chance to turn that around, and I'm very fascinated to think of what this is going to look like with him and Caleb Williams. I know there's some really smart people that I respect out there who have said, I don't know about this fit, between what Ben Johnson has done in Detroit and what Caleb Williams likes to do, just because I would say that Goff and Williams are pretty different in terms of quarterback stylings. And I totally agree with that. But if Ben Johnson's the coach that we think he is, and I mean, just we'll break it down what we think he is here, but I can't imagine he's going to come in there and run the Jared Goff offense for Caleb Williams, especially because a lot of what they did in Detroit was specifically to make Jared Goff comfortable. And I'm actually interested in what the hell they're going to do without Ben Johnson. That's a whole nother fascinating discussion.
It is. I know the ramifications for the Lions is going to be really interesting. And then losing potentially Aaron Glenn on the defensive side. Yeah, the Lions kind of reloading is going to be an interesting subplot of all this. But I think when you hire Ben Johnson, like, there's a reason he wanted to work with a talented quarterback. Like, that's what everyone knows that's what you need in the league, is really one of the dudes. And if not one of the dudes, you better have a great team around him. That takes time. But I think there's a reason Ben Johnson went there, and that's to work with Caleb. And I want to push back on some of the narrative about, oh, it's not a great fit because of how, like, throwing on time and everything. And I still am frustrated with some of the discussions with Caleb. And I feel like everyone's kind of making him out to be some wild horse that you can't keep in the pocket because he's going into creation mode every play. And it couldn't be more opposite of how he actually plays. And we've talked about this, is that he tries to be too perfect and tries to be like, no, I'm getting to 1 to 2 to 3 to 4 to 5. And again, this is why I'm optimistic and bullish on Caleb Williams. I had him rated highly in the draft. I have not lost that. I wrote about him midseason, was really liking what I saw. Some stuff dropped off in the second half, but we saw some really great moments and stretches in the second half of the season. But he can operate on time. That is why I really liked him. He has some of the best footwork and some of the best polish with this, like ball handling, working in the pocket. His pocket movement's really good. I just thought that the level line got a lot of blame on this, which I'll talk about in a sec too. But a lot of it was the receivers, the routes, the lack of details that was happening. It never really too felt like concepts that I thought Caleb might be comfortable with. As far as a lot of stuff to the outside. And I thought Caleb was a very good high-low thrower over the middle. You know, just stuff never worked. Nothing was cohesive with the Bears this past year, which is why everyone got fired.
Course of the season.
Yes, right. There's multiple versions of it. But with Caleb, I think with Ben Johnson, this is going to actually be great because he can throw well on the move. This is an offense that loves play action, loves bootleg stuff. Caleb's great at that stuff. Caleb's also good at turning his back to the defense. Like, he's comfortable going under center and doing those things, which is something that, again, I think there's a miss, you know, he's a little misconstrued right now. I think everyone's like, oh, he takes all these sacks because of this, because he's trying too much. To me, it's he's taking sacks because he's trying to be too perfect. And so it's that balance. Every quarterback's got to find the balance of when to create, when to stay in structure. I thought he was stubborn in a sense from that. But why I'm saying all this is I actually think Ben Johnson's going to, like, This is huge. This is great fit because Caleb's like, I want to be anal and I want everything to be perfect and I want to do it like this. And he's working with a coach who, from an outsider's perspective, seems very anal and seems everybody get to their depth, everybody do this. And I don't know. I think it's a great fit and I really am excited to see it because I do think he's going to maybe trim out some of the extra and really hone in on what Caleb is good at, which to me is operating from the pocket. And so I think this is a good fit for it. I'm very, very excited. But it's the other things with these head coaches you brought up, we kind of don't know. You kind of look at context clues, who are the assistants they hire. So those are other things, aspects of this. And he hires Dennis Allen. Johnson hired Dennis Allen, potentially rumored, as his defensive coordinator. I love this hire. I love when it's the young offensive play calling coach gets a vet defensive coordinator. The Sean McVay, Wade Phillips is the ultimate pairing in my brain. But that guy that used to be a head coach, has been around the league, has called plays, is just a great person to lean on. Great person that, like, when it's on offense, they get off the field, he can turn his back to the defense because he knows Dennis Allen's going to handle it. And Dennis Allen was a head coach who can handle some game management stuff that might crop up, you know, communicated as well. So I really like that fit as well. But, you know, can we bring the Lions offensive line with him? Can we bring Hank Fraley with him, the offensive line coach, which we talked about before the show? That kind of turned into that Packers system where the offensive line coach is the offensive coordinator. It's just a title bump, you know, and the head coach is the play caller. That, I think, is huge. It's like the Trojan horse offensive line coach. So, but I think that's the next step. But you texted me yesterday, and my brain hadn't even gone on this path. And then you got me really excited. And then I was like, holy crap, I didn't even think about that. But I'll set it up. I have a theory that I like Roman Dunze as a power slot. If anyone's watched the Lions the last few years, who stood out for the Lions in the power slot role? Matt Harmon.
Yeah, Amon-Ra St. Brown. I will say that this was my first, you said like, oh, I hadn't even thought about this. Like, well, this was my first selfish thought because I was very high on Roma Dunsay as a prospect. I had him ranked as a wide receiver 2 in this class and was closer to putting him 1 than 3. Look, all those guys were tier 1 prospects. Like if you had had Neighbors, Harrison, Odunze, I couldn't care less. Like all those guys were just like different
blue
flavors,
chips.
But
all of them
blue chips. Blue chips. And I think the one guy who probably just didn't have that type of year from a statistical perspective, although Harrison was obviously disappointing based on the overinflated expectations, which is not his fault, but it's funny actually when you're talking about Caleb Williams, he still is discussed as if he is Kyler Murray. And like, I'm gonna tell you what, like watching these two guys are they're very different in my opinion. And like, I think the trajectory of Williams can still very much be going up, and this is going to be a big part of it. But yeah, for me with Odunze, I had thought of him more as like an X receiver because it's what he did in college. And he's, I think, just ready made to play that role, but in a almost like a possession X type of way. Not that he can obviously be a downfield ball winner and make big plays there, but I've compared him to like an Allen Robinson type of player. Although Robinson, I think, probably was a candidate to be a power slot. And I know that when he was a free agent, several teams liked him in that role, but he obviously ends up going to LA, who they already had like the original power slot in Cooper Kupp. And it was especially where Robinson was at that point in his career. Like he never got to that role in time, basically, before he kind of fell apart here from a physical standpoint, but which is unfortunate because it really
he was good at with the Steelers last year, though. So you're right.
Yeah, as a blocker.
As a blocker. And
he stood out in like very limited moments with the Lions this year in a blocking sense as well, because unfortunate.
Right.
Really hoping Allen Robinson was going to get a Super Bowl this year, but alas, not going to happen. But anyways, back to Roma Dunsay, I had been still thinking of him conceptually as like an X receiver that, you know, you want to pepper the football there and like be a man coverage beater on the outside, but you've started to pitch me this theory of him more as like a Chris Godwin power slot receiver. And there were definitely moments towards the back half of the season. I think it was like in the Green Bay game in the second one. I could be mistaken on that, but like he made a lot of big plays like from the vertical in the vertical game from the slot. And that is interesting, especially in this offense that I've actually been working on Jamison Williams recently here, charting his routes for reception perception. What a funny player Jamison Williams still is, because he's just not a perfect player at all, but he's so well deployed in this offense. Yep. And there was a play actually that, again, against the Packers that I was in the game I was working on before I got on here. Williams is in the slot, St. Brown is in the slot, and then Jahmyr Gibbs is like the outside receiver. And what I think is really fascinating with what Johnson does with Williams in particular, you think about like, oh, Jamison Williams, speed, like he's the guy who takes the top off the defense. I mean, not really. He's more of like a horizontal threat in this play in particular. And it's just, this is the stuff that was not in Chicago last year. Okay. When I'm talking about like these three routes are about to work off of each other, that was not happening in Chicago last year. So Gibbs, who's obviously the running back, runs like a go route with a double move on the outside against single high and like takes one corner out of there, holds the eyes of that safety. Amon-Ra St. Brown runs kind of like just a hitch route and occupies two defenders, which just opens this giant lane for Jamison Williams, who's got just one corner on him, which he just completely then like 28-yard gain as soon as he catches the ball. And that's the type of stuff that I think is really fascinating, because I think DJ Moore is a guy who could run really well on some of these runway routes and get yards after catch. He's not explosive like Jamison Williams, but he is really good and instinctive, I think, with the ball in his hands. And the previous staff in Chicago we'll just throw them screens and stuff like that. Like that was their answer, which is just not enough. So I really am excited about the fit here. I think Odunze is potentially like a power slot receiver that's a high volume player and moves the chains like that. I am interested in that. I want to hear you expound on why you think he can fit into that role.
Oh, it was all those Washington receivers, even McMillan, who's a little skinnier than Odunze and Jalen Polk, is that they're all willing to scrap. And that's why I was like, I love all three of these guys. Like, you know, it was fun to watch that Washington offense because of that. And so he has the size. I mean, he's almost 220. I think he's, you know, upper above 215. That's a big receiver. 6'2", 6'3", 215. I mean, he's built just like Godwin. I mean, I would even say he's a little bigger than Godwin. I've always thought that Odunze 2 was good getting kind of the simple yards after the catch, much like Godwin is. Plant his foot, get north, has kind of that vision to get north and squeak, kind of get skinny through the little blocks on the outside, which I think, you know, smoke screens, bubbles, think Amon-Ra St. Brown catching some of those and working on the inside. Like, and I just think Ndunze has that skill set, like that it's a benefit that I think he can legitimately line up at all three spots, X, slot, Z. I really do think that. I think where the power slot role is, you enhance his blocking. And then if you want to get into two tight end looks or a fullback look, because Johnson will do that, he can still be your Z and DJ Moore can always stay at your X. So, but I think when you get into the slot stuff, he's willing to scrap as a blocker. He's a big target underneath. He's essentially your F tight end. So that short intermediate stuff, you brought up the Packers game. The game that really stood out, and I kind of was like, hey, look at the power slot, was against the Lions, ironically enough. And he kept beating Brian Branch in the slot. And that's where I like. It's just that he's bigger than, if you want to go tiny slot corner, he's bigger than that, stronger than that. And then he's more fluid than a lot of safeties that line up there with the size that doesn't get overwhelmed. So in the modern NFL, I just think he's like the epitome of what you want in the slot that can basically be a de facto tight end on some plays. And I like Ndunze as a competitor. Like, I like, this is why Godwin is the ultimate teammate. And everyone around him says the same thing. Even after he got paid, he's willing to like just block for a rookie running back or block for some backup receiver on the screen. He was willing to do it. And then he gets rewarded in the red zone and all the other stuff. So I just think Ndunze kind of has that mindset for it that makes sense. But you bring up the Jameson Williams routes, the Amon-Ra St. Brown stuff. We've talked about this too, is that even how Ben Johnson used Sam Laporta, who's not a good blocker, I would say even a poor blocker, but it can be a dynamic mismatch, is how he used him as a rookie really was like where I was like, Johnson gets it, man. Every guy in the role makes a lot of sense. He's got some Sean Payton to him, where it might be everybody's in a very kind of specific, which makes sense. Dan Campbell's got a lot of Sean Payton into him too.
Yeah, and there's a lot of
there's a lot of mixing same
in this, or in this, like in this tree overall. Obviously, yeah. Dennis Allen, and they're talking to Darren Rizzi about the special teams coordinator gig too. So it's a little bit there.
Yeah, great call. No, that's it. Must be stated because the offense is more of a Peyton offense than a West Coast or a Air Coryell. And Peyton's got a mixed match of stuff. I've never even know what to call him, like West Coast.
He's like his own. He's like his own.
He's his own thing. He really is.
It's fun. It's sick. But and I think it's actually been really beautifully expressed in Denver this year. But I mean, in Detroit the last few seasons as well.
And then we copied a lot of stuff when I was at Wisconsin. Sean Payton stuff and North Turner stuff. And that was kind of, so he has some North Turner to him too, which is, I love too. But anyways, Johnson has that as well. But also just kind of wrap it up is that he streamlines everyone's roles. Like the passing concept, the Lions run are all stuff Jared Goff's really good at. He'll rip the crap out of Diggs. He'll rip the crap out of these certain routes, but they don't ask him to push the ball on like a deep out route, you know, cause he doesn't have an elite arm. Caleb's got a little more juice. Caleb throws really well on the move. Like I'm curious, like you are, how he streamlines it for Caleb and for all these other guys, because just everyone's role made sense with the Lions. And that's why I'm optimistic about how it looks with the Bears. Last thing I'll say is he also doesn't like DeAndre Swift. He's the one that basically ran him out of town. So
my second thought after the Ndunze thing that I sent to you was, oh yeah, that's right. Like he had Swift in Detroit, and everyone was like, what are they taking Jahmyr Gibbs for? They got another pass catching back. Well, look at where these two players are within the hierarchy of NFL running backs and how you deploy them. And yeah, the run game, especially, obviously we talk a lot about the pass game and the Caleb Williams of it all, which of course we are. But man, yeah, how this ends up working from a run game perspective and what they do from the offensive line. Cause you know, I mean, I don't know that you could say that anybody was better at weaponizing offensive linemen in the run, maybe Philadelphia, but like right. Philadelphia and Detroit are probably like 1 and 2, of course, what the Niners do with Trent Williams and when there's a lot, but I mean,
but the easy 1-2 is usually Lions and Eagles, kind of like if you're ranking these guys. Yeah
And that is the thing too, that Johnson's gonna have to come in here and like immediately capture the players, because I think it goes a little understated just how important Dan Campbell and the buy-in is for what goes on in the offense, because though not like not only do the, obviously the offensive linemen are, you know, they're moving around a lot. These guys are out on the perimeter. You know, they're setting the edge and things like that. These receivers in Detroit block their ass off. Even skinny old Jamison Williams, like, he has given a lot of effort in the run game. And you always talk about this, that is like the first sign of, like, is your culture good, or do these receivers buy in? Is what kind of effort are they giving in the run game? And I definitely think that's going to be encouraging. Like, if we can, if Johnson can come in here and again immediately capture the locker room and immediately capture these players from, like, a buy-in perspective, there's a lot of potential here. But they do have to get the offensive line right. That's, like, you know, they can't just be chasing. I don't think they will be chasing a lot of eye candy. I do think that first and foremost, like, we already have some skill position players. I am interested to see what they do with Swift, because there is usually it's like, oh, there's a history there, but it's like, there's a history there. Yeah. I don't know about that. It'd be interesting what they do in the backfield, but, and maybe they get one, like, speed guy in the receiver room just to like stretch things out and create that spacing in Johnson's offense. But I would say the priority on the offense has to be the offensive line here.
Absolutely. I tweeted this. I said, first step, get a center. Center yourself, remember? That was our lessons. Center yourself. But I don't think he has not learned the lessons. I think Johnson understands where his bread was buttered in Detroit without all those guys. And I already had someone tweet, said Darnell Wright better get his hands warmed up, because, you know, that trick play is gonna hit like crack when Darnell Wright's catching it and stuff. So I'm as optimistic, like you said at the top of it, you never know how these head coaches are. And we'll talk about the next hire that we had this offseason cycle. But I'm pretty optimistic about it, or bullish on it. I'm not going to say this is going to be perfect. It's going to be amazing. Don't know how the personality is. Johnson seems like a very kind of detail-oriented guy, but not a rah-rah guy. You don't need a rah-rah guy at head coach, but you do need buy-in. And how you get buy-in the most from players is help me win and help me get stats. And Johnson so far has shown that he can do it. And that's why, even if you don't have the personality for it, if you can do it, guys will buy in. That's how professional football players are, professional athletes are. So I'm optimistic. I want to see it. So far, the assistants have been interesting, and I really like it. So far, so good, I think, for the Bears, which I think they need. So NFC North, just juggernaut, man. It's just an absolute juggernaut. We're going to take a quick break and then get to Mike Vrabel and the Patriots. All right, we are back with some more coaching carousel news. This was the other head coaching hire in the NFL, probably the most predictable one, one that we could all, the betting favorite, I think was minus 5,000 on this one, but that's Mike Vrabel to the New England Patriots, former Patriots player, didn't coach there. Just, you know, he bounced around. You know, he's a Ohio State guy. He started there. I was at Wisconsin. We played against him. He was an assistant. I remember him doing the warm-ups just as he does as a head coach. And now is the head coach of the New England Patriots. Matt, what were your thoughts of Vrabel now in New England, or back in New England, I should say?
Yeah, it was obviously telegraphed that this was going to be Mike Vrabel, I think, from really, really towards like the last few weeks of the Gerard Mayo era, that this was coming.
I don't always have sources, but I was told Ben Johnson made it closer than you would expect. Like, it was Vrabel all the way. And then it truly was like a 24 hours where they're like, whoa, wait a sec, actually. So I will say that
that's good.
Trust me. That's why I said it too. Okay. It was all right. It was an automatic lock, but yeah, sorry to interrupt you, but that was one little piece of news I got.
No, that's good. That's actually good to know, because I think if it had been so telegraphed that I was like almost kind of glad that they at least interviewed him, because to me, you know, I know people have thoughts about, like, they're talking to too many candidates, you know, they're interviewing this, that, and the other. I mean, Andy Behrens has had a joke about who the Bears are interviewing on Twitter at least every other day. Like, you know, they're talking to other podcast hosts and things like that. I mean, I can't believe Behrens himself didn't get an interview. That's a shame. Maybe next time. But for the Patriots, they kept it pretty small, and I think it would have been pretty ridiculous to not at least talk to Ben Johnson and, like, get some of his ideas about football and things like that.
Right.
But yeah, it was almost, I would say, a pretty shameless process, to the point that they even, let's go ahead and talk to Pep Hamilton and Byron Leftwich and put them on the same freaking graphic, you know, to put out there.
That was bad.
That was tough. That was I'm not always the guy that's like, that was a tough look, but that was a tough look there for the Patriots on that one. So it seemed like it was going to be Vrabel from the beginning, and it's good that Johnson at least made it close. But I think that I do think this building needed to just sort of, I know it's kind of weird to say a reset because it's a guy that's been in the orbit and been in the family before. You know, he was just there getting inducted into the Ring of Honor, talking about what a special place it was and things like that. But yeah, I do think that Rabel's going to come in here and kind of like put his stamp back on the organization. It is funny that it seemed like they wanted to get away from, you know, the coach at the center of the universe, and they wanted to be more of like a normal organization with a general manager and a head coach, and like, let's groom the head coach. And then just 1 year later, they're like, ah, forget it. Let's just go back to like one guy is the central figure, which we know is what Vrabel wants.
They looked at the Ring of Honor and they're like, who can we hire?
Rabel's available. He's over there consulting with the Browns. He definitely wants a new job. So I think it's fine hire. And I think that, you know, he'll just get this thing kind of back towards like some normalcy, because I feel for Gerard Mayo. I do ultimately think he got put in a bad spot. You know, not only was he a first time head coach, he hasn't even been coaching that long. I think he's only been coaching since 2019. He was never a coordinator. He was also kind of taking on more responsibility from a defensive perspective, obviously with Belichick and other Belichicks out of the building. So I think it was a tough spot to put him in, and to get canned after 1 year, I do feel for him. But it was not a well run team last year. And I think if nothing else, Vrabel's going to have them as a well-run team.
That's what you asked me, like how I felt about the Mayo situation a couple months ago or a month ago, and I kind of was like, well, I always felt it was kind of unfair, you know, how much flack he was getting, and anything he said was put under a microscope, and you could tell he was just learning what to and what not to say in interviews because he's a first-time friggin' head coach and all these things. And but the thing was, is there was no kind of, man, they're keeping these games close. Man, they're like, Joe, they're just having one bad play here. Oh, man, they don't have any penalties. They just don't have the talent. It was like, no, they were playing sloppy. They're kind of like on both sides, the defense, which had injuries, I will say that, but we're giving up gashes all the time. No kind of new, fresh ideas, I thought, with that. And so that's why I was kind of like, it wasn't the most optimistic one where I was like, I'm going to put my chest out. But I did think he kind of caught a lot of the heat, sometimes not justified. Like, you know, sometimes it was like, what do you want me to do? And same with like Elliott Wolf as the de facto GM. It's like, you know, all these guys were guys that Belichick drafted and signed. They're just trying to restock it. I will say that Vrabel's going to find someone, anyone that has an Ohio State background, you're going to look at them for assistance. But I do think Vrabel, like you said, is going to bring discipline. The thing about those Titans teams was, I mean, they had a lot of injuries. This is my one negative with Vrabel. I'll start with that. Practices hard, works his guys hard, which I'm always kind of lean towards that, but guys would get hurt as the season would go along. It's just kind of a thing. It get worn down. Look at the Lions a little bit this year as well. It's just when you practice hard, that can happen. But no matter what, they would have like, I remember previewing games, I'd be like, man, they got like five undrafted free agents start for them, and they would like win. It wouldn't even be like, oh, they played hard. It would like they pull out wins. They would win ugly. And even everyone looks at him as a big kind of meathead, rah-rah coach. Vrabel is a football genius. I will say this. I've talked to him. I know people that have worked with him. His sense of game management got better as far as being aggressive on fourth down, those types of things. But he knows like when to burn timeouts, know all that stuff. He just knows it. Like, he has his clock guy, his game management guy that's supposed to be good, but he knows this as well, which I think is really interesting from a former player, former all that. But he has to stick the offensive coordinator hire. Like that's why this is almost like a TBD to me until that hire becomes official, because I trust Vrabel's CEO-ness. But not, it all depends on the assistants he hires to run the scheme. And so I know the guys will play hard. I know they'll be disciplined. I know they'll be well coached because of how the practices are run, how the meetings are, because it starts at the top. I am very optimistic about that with Vrabel. I like this hire. I'll say that too. I do like this hire. It's just that he has to nail the OC. And right now it's Josh McDaniels is the favorite, which I'm fine with. I'm okay with it. It's not
whatever.
Like fireworks or everything. Yeah. McDaniels is year with Cam Newton. When he went Cam Newton and then he went Mac Jones rookie year, those bumped me up. McDaniels bumped up my brain a little bit. I was like, okay, that's good coaching right there. But then the Raiders years happened, and I'm kind of a little tempered a little bit with that.
I don't know what to think about McDaniels. I really don't. And
it's solid.
It's probably fine if they hire him. I do think it would be nice if they found some new ideas on offense, because they're getting a little bit Saintsy, where it's like, when's the last time they've had some new ideas over there?
Yeah.
Where like that was what I my big why I was excited about the Clint Kubiak hire for the Saints this year, and worked out for 2 weeks. But you know, it's just, this is a,
still like him.
Yeah, I like Clint Kubiak. He's interviewing with the Seahawks, and I know he interviewed with the Browns, who the Browns hired Tommy Reese to be their offensive coordinator, which is just like, hey, we're gonna do more Stefanski stuff. That's enough of this Ken Dorsey, Deshaun Watson nonsense. We're gonna get back to our roots here. But he was a guy that Vrabel was really interested in potentially hiring. Obviously, shared some connective tissue with the Cleveland stuff and things like that. So I just think they're getting a little bit like too insular if they hire McDaniels, but it's probably fine. And people it will probably be a very detailed offense. And I don't think Van Pelt was, you know, doing anything egregious out there. People had a lot of problems with the play calling, but I thought they're just doing some good, solid NFL stuff from an offensive perspective. I just think the players were kind of a train wreck. Not even from a talent perspective, but also just a details perspective. I mean, Elliot Wolf definitely sent like a shot across the bow when they asked him about, you know, kind of the coaching staff and things like that. And he said, like, yeah, I mean, Jalen Polk, great example. We thought that guy was plug and play. And that's like something you and I have said, is that, oh, he should have been a guy you dropped in there
first
day
month,
one.
Okay.
Yeah. And just like, hey, just he's going to be a solid C plus at the worst. And he was like an F minus as a player. That is like a potential, I think, black mark on the coaching staff, which, like I said, Elliot Wolf seemed pretty ready to say that too. So at the very least, if McDaniels is in there, I think people will have the details tightened up and things like that. But that is the big hire, is certainly the offensive coordinator spot.
It passes the threshold. It's not inspiring. That's kind of this. But I do, like you said, it's detail oriented. That's what they're going for. I did look into, and this is my new favorite thing, is looking at receiver coach backgrounds. But the Patriots receiver coach, like, Not a lot of history there. He used to be like a D2 head coach and everything, but not a lot of NFL experience. And I was like, oh, this is making a lot more sense right now. Your little problem about being like insular, I used to call that the Texas problem with Mac, when Mac Brown was the head coach. And you looked at every one of their assistants. Texas, 2001. Texas, 1998. Texas, 2004. Texas, 2002. Like, all of them were graduates. All were assistants at Texas. It was like, all right, you guys gotta get some rejuvenated, just a little bit of new ideas in there. Don't have to revamp the whole thing. I'll go over one of those guys. Interesting to me is, does he maybe go after like a Chip Kelly, who has right now Ohio State ties. I don't know. Chip Kelly to me just seems like an antsy guy. He's a guy that maybe just wants to take the next thing. I don't know. I think Chip Kelly's going to get some sniffs as an OC in the NFL, but that was one. They requested permission from Marcus Brady, who's the passing game coordinator for the Chargers. Not the passing game I'd like to pick ideas from, but they interviewed him, or they're looking to interview him. And then keep in mind out, Arthur Smith was an OC. Vrabel's nailed a couple of these OC hires in the past. He had Matt LaFleur for a year, who had the genius idea of, why don't I give the ball to Derrick Henry? And then promoted Arthur Smith from tight end coach to OC and goes, and Arthur Smith goes, I'm going to keep giving the ball to Derrick Henry. And Arthur Smith did well. So maybe he goes after the other LaFleur, Mike LaFleur, who's the OC with the Rams, doesn't call plays, but you know, he was the Jets OC with the Zach Wilson year. So, you know, kind of,
but I think LaFleur got a little, got a bit of a bad rap in New York. I actually think that's a good candidate. And even Garrett Wilson himself came out and said, like, yeah, I think the Rams and the Jets played late in the season, and they asked him, you know, about his time with LaFleur, Mike LaFleur. And he was kind of, oh, you know, it actually, I'm paraphrasing here. I'm probably butchering the quote, but he's like, it was, you know, looking back on it was a little bit better than maybe I gave it credit for. Like I look back fondly on those times or whatever. Yeah. Right. And I thought that was fascinating after the Rodgers experience. And yeah, I think LaFleur had some pretty interesting ideas, especially with like multiple backs, you know, pony personnel, things like that, but also just the way they deployed Wilson in multiple spots too, I thought was cool. So that actually would be a pretty good hire. And I think even just the way like the McVay, who's always been very good about this, like let LaFleur call the plays in week 18 when they were basically playing all their backups. And I thought there was a pretty good showing with Jimmy Garoppolo and the backups for LA.
No, I like LaFleur. He's one that I want to circle. I could see him jump in to get play calling duties. That's you know, just a big thing with these guys. Yeah, no, I just they have to nail this just to see where it goes. And then defense wise, have no idea. Maybe Terrell Williams. They have a background. He's the defensive line run game coordinator for the Lions. Aaron Glenn's moving on, so maybe Campbell just promotes him. You know, just don't know. Again, dominoes to fall here, but I think this was a good hire from the Patriots. They needed kind of. They don't need rejuvenation. They just need to clean things up. And I think Vrabel's the guy to do that. So just more dominoes that need to fall. All right, let's get into more assistant coach news, because this is where everyone tunes in for. I'm going to start with the Bengals double whammy here. First, they hired Al Golden, fresh off the national championship game, which played literally last night. Fresh. Game ended within an hour. He is now the Bengals defense coordinator. Al Golden is now the Bengals defense coordinator, at least rumored to be. He was defense coordinator for Notre Dame, who had a very good defense this year. As someone that watched a lot of Notre Dame this year because of Riley Leonard, always stood out to me how well they played. Very good tackling team, very sound team. He was linebacker coach for the Bengals in 2020 and 2021. Former head coach of the University of Miami, Temple. Don't think he's bringing the shirt and tie back to the NFL, but
I would respect this hire. If he did.
I know. I kind of want to see it. Mike Nolan and Jack Del Rio did it for like 2006 or something like that. And because Reebok was a sponsor and they could do it or something like that. Yeah, that was feels like a lifetime ago. But
Mike Nolan, one of the first people I ever did on camera work with back at the NFL Network. So shout out to Mike Nolan. I know it didn't go very well for him in Dallas, which it was disappointing, but hell of a guy.
I worked with Mike in the 1 year in Atlanta, and his son is now Christopher Nolan, not the director. I used to say it to all the time. I'm like, God, you did such a good job on The Dark Knight. But he's now a scout with the Eagles, actually. Mike Nolan. I'll go and hire, though. I like this. I thought they did a good job. He has some NFL experience, has head coaching experience, like to hire. Do you have any thoughts on Al Golden or anything?
I was going to say, the Louie Narumo defense, we'll talk about him obviously going to Indianapolis. It was very... very creative. It involved the linebackers and the safeties a lot, but that obviously atrophied pretty quickly because the talent was so poor there. I just think it's blank slate there for Cincinnati on defense. You know, even Hendrickson, who's obviously their best player by a lot, was pissed off about his contract last season, and they basically told him to get back on the back burner, buddy, because we got bigger problems on the other side of the ball. Otherwise, like I said, I think it's almost blank slate over there. So new ideas, anything is kind of open on the table for Cincinnati.
It's one of those, I respect the hell out of Anarumo, and I'm going to talk about him in a sec, but it was this needed change. Needed, like you said, fresh ideas, and maybe he has different eyes for personnel and everything, so we'll see if it goes down. But this was going to happen. It was inevitable. The other move, and if anyone has followed the Bengals, and I know how their fan base reacts, is they hired a new offensive line coach, Scott Peters, who was the Patriots offensive line coach, and I actually like Peters. Patriots offensive line stunk, don't get me wrong, but I actually thought the stuff was very well coached. Or I shouldn't say well coached. Yeah, it was well coached. Well detailed. Very detailed. And the sack, no eyes were going the wrong way when the offensive line was just losing one-on-ones. It's the opposite of the Texans, where Texans' eyes are going every which way and everyone's wrong. The Patriots guys, they're going the right way. They just get bulldozed, or just lose. And I thought the run game was always sound. It just didn't, wasn't the juiciest run game. It wasn't the most explosive offense, but I did think it was sound and well coached or well detailed. So I like this hire. Peter's going there. It's going to be a Burrow system, a lot of gun stuff, but I do think the run game that the Patriots use this year is going to match with what the Bengals want to do out of the gun. So a lot of duo stuff, a lot of things like that. So I actually like this hire. And he's a Bill Callahan disciple. So I know not a lot of people know O-line coach stuff, but this is one that I'm bullish on. I think it could be a good improvement for the Bengals too.
It's fascinating with just the whole the Joe Burrow offense, because that is what they run there. Okay. And I think it's fun. We've talked about this before, how Zach Taylor, I think, gets a little bit of a bad rap, because they don't do this. They don't do that. Well, they don't do it because the quarterback doesn't want to do it. And the best example of that, Nate, is the fact that as soon as Joe Burrow gets hurt, guess what they start doing? They go under center with Jake Browning. They run a bunch of play action. They do a bunch more motion. It's like that's the example right there. And it's just, listen, one of those guys in terms of Zach Taylor and Joe Burrow has more cachet in the building, and it's not the head coach. So even if Zach Taylor's like, hey, did you see all that cool stuff I did with Jake Browning? What if you try? No, I'm not going to do that. Thanks though, coach. Appreciate it. So I think just any sort of offensive line coach molding into that world is going to be interesting, because I think they got a lot out of Chase Brown as like a real deal feature back. I mean, that guy was on the field over 80% of the snaps, game after game after game after game. But he was mostly, he was fine as a running back. And I think as a true runner, and I think you get a second pitch in there, he's probably a guy I think you can have as your running back one. But they was most useful in the passing game. So I think as they're sort of still on a journey to find out what their run game looks like within the world that Joe Burrow wants to live. But I do think that shot, like the shotgun run game with Chase Brown, was a little bit better than the shotgun run game with Joe Mixon.
And the main complaint that I see from Bengals fans is like, why don't we use the motion? Why aren't we under center? Why don't we do this play action stuff? And that's always, I finally just said, it's because your quarterback doesn't like it. And it's going to be like that. They have tried to bridge some things, and there's some packages I could see, but just watching this year, it almost seemed like they leaned back into the Burrow offense even more. I mean, justifiably so. Look at this offense this year. So like, I'm all for it. It's just that it's not going to look like anybody else's offense, because this is what it is. It's like Manning back in the aughts with the Colts. It was just like, they ran their own offense, and if you watch it, you'd be like, man, that's static and boring. But when you have a supercomputer quarterback and real dudes at receiver, you can win that way. And so that's why it is. Everybody has to learn that way, as opposed to like, oh, we got to bring these new ideas. This is just what you're going to be. There's negative versions of the quarterback's offense. Everyone used to complain about the Seattle, like, why aren't they letting Russ cook and all that? It's like, well, this is what you have to run with Russ. And same with the Eagles right now. Why do we run these routes so much? Well, that's what your quarterback can handle. It's like, I can tell you when you have three different play callers and the offense looks exactly the same, well, I can tell you what they're probably why. It's probably because the quarterback prefers it. We mentioned who Golden was replacing, and that's Lou Anarumo, who is now the Colts defensive coordinator, replacing Gus Bradley. This one actually felt, I had no like thought on it, like, oh, Anarumo to the Colts. But when it happened, I'm like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. Like, kind of. You know, like Colts kind of just seem like we need like a vet, no name kind of guy here. It's not just spice things up. Look at our quarterback. We've already spiced it up a little too much on this team. So I think they went with like a steady hand who has some great ideas, especially once it gets into game planning in the postseason. But the thing that kind of worries me is some of the things that crippled that Bengals defense at the end is not really what the Colts have. They have a little bit better front seven as far as stopping the run, but safety play, you know, I'm curious with those matches. But what do you think about Anarumo now with the Colts as defense coordinator, Matt?
Well, it'll be a breath of fresh air because there, I think it's just it's a team that needed a change on the defensive side of the football. I don't even think it's just a Gus Bradley scheme, ran stale, anything like that. I think even from a personality standpoint, like I think they need somebody who's a little bit more from what I know, and I don't know everything, but like from what I know, more of like straight to the point, dry type of personality that Lou Anarumo is, as opposed to like Gus Bradley's like all-time, you know, nice guy, energetic, everybody really likes him. And I'm not saying that people don't like Anarumo, but I think just from a personality standpoint, it's a needed change there, because that's been the talking point out of the Colts building, is that things have gotten a little lax, right? I mean, obviously McAfee's been the one really talking about it, but even when you get like the head coach asked about it, or some of the players asked about it, it's not like a thing that they've denied, really, that things have gotten a little lax there. So that I think is probably important to this hire, just from a personality standpoint, getting somebody like that in the building. But definitely like I've joked about this with you, but I know I've talked about it on some other podcasts. Like when I chart receivers against the Gus Bradley defense specifically, it feels like, oh, I'm back. Like I'm in a comfortable area here, because that was the defense that when I started charting for reception perception was just everywhere in the league.
Everywhere.
Like 2014, 2015. Yeah. That was really when it started to really go everywhere across the league. And Gus Bradley's got a little bit more to him than just that these days, but like the base concepts, I'm like, I know what this coverage is, I know what it looks like. Yep. And like I can you know, there's a lot of people who maybe disagree with me, but I'm like, I know that that's open against that coverage, all right? It's like, that's an easy charting experience. I do think Anarumo at times very much made things difficult and made things complicated from a coverage picture perspective. So it's kind of a sneaky big change from both guys. So we'll see how it takes, especially because I don't think that they're necessarily just dripping with talent on that side of the ball either.
Right.
And it's probably a staff that's on the hot seat, even though maybe nobody's ever seemingly on the hot seat in Indianapolis. You can just kind of hang out in your job forever. I would imagine that if they miss the playoffs again, the staff probably gets cleaned out. So that's going to be like, that offense is going to have to carry its weight, because I think it's going to maybe be one of these defenses that starts slow, and by the end of the season, things have gotten a little tighter. So hopefully like the offense can just can pick things up and kind of drag the defense along within the first half of the season before things maybe get equal. But based on last season, that might be also be a lot to ask as well.
No, that thing about the you kind of know what every coverage is. Anna Rumo is very game plan specific, which can be hit and it can be a miss. But the one difference is Bradley never blitzed. Like that was his thing. Like it was like, oh, that, and that was a whole Legion of Boom thing. But like you said, it's like there's more variance than just running cover three and cover one every play. But he was like always a sub 10% blitzer. I mean, as a play caller, and like Anna Rumo, I'm not saying blitz. You don't have to be freaking Spags, everyone, but just that little uptick of simulated and creepers and blitz just make the quarterback think just a little bit. Otherwise, and just, oh, cover three, throw that route. Cover three, throw that route. It actually becomes pretty easy, especially if you don't have the talent. Last DC hire here, or assistant hire, Jeff Ulbrich, Falcons defense coordinator, had been the defense coordinator there a few years ago as an interim. He was a linebacker coach in Atlanta, another Legion of Boom disciple. He's kind of the next step that these Legion of Boom guys did, which is they went from cover three to quarters and would rotate the safety down, run three buzz is what they call it. But they, but why my only concern with this, and I'll just start with the negatives of Jeff Ulbrich, is his defenses always thrive with a really good defensive line because they don't blitz a lot either. And they just play fast. What's been the Falcons' negative calling card for the past 12 years, 13 years, 15 years?
So I was going to say 15, maybe, I don't know, 20.
It's John Abraham. Like, I mean, it's been forever. And yeah, that's my only concern is that his style, which I actually thought when he was the Falcon, he became the interim after Dan Quinn got fired and became the defensive play caller. He actually did some really cool stuff on passing downs, which I was like, oh, okay, Jeff Ulbrich. And then with the Jets, it was kind of that defense fell apart once Salah got fired. And I was, you know, that's Jets season was just wacky anyways. But any thoughts on Ulbrich with the Falcons? I kind of gave mine already. Just kind of need a pass rush, I think, to make this thing work.
Yeah, I don't know how much to hold against Ulbrich for the defense falling apart there, because I think you could also say, like, yeah, once his attention was divided between being the freaking Jets head coach, which comes with a lot of nonsense. You know, you're having to talk about, hey, does the owner care about Madden ratings and stuff like that in press conferences? You're having to worry about that. You're having to worry about the Rodgers stuff. And you're not putting the attention that you were probably putting into the defense before Salah got fired. I think it's going to be portrayed as, oh, yeah, once he had to take on
great on a curve.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
The Jets curve.
I think the fact that when he was just the defensive coordinator, even if obviously we got to give Robert Salah a lot of credit, if that defense was really good, I think that's like more of a feather in his cap, and I'm almost happy for him that he just gets to go back to that. And Raheem Morris has seemed like he wants to stay pretty hands off with like the hands off's not the way to say it, but he doesn't want to get his fingers too deep into the defensive part of it. Like he basically let Jimmy Lake have that side of the ball, and it went really poorly. So I think now he's got another guy that he can just kind of leave to the defense while he can be the head coach. Which, by the way, Raheem, if you're going to do that, let's get them timeouts in order, buddy. Like, let's get that clock management in order in the 2 minutes. Let's figure that out. But I do think Ulbrich getting this job makes a lot of sense. And I agree with you that my first thought was also, let's get a pass rush. But that's also been my thoughts for the Falcons for definitely even before I was talking into microphones for podcasts.
Yeah, nothing really changed as far as what they needed, whoever they called. But yeah, they're going to play hard. They're going to play fast. That's one thing these coaches always get, I would say. I would think the Jets stuff was, like you said, it was just so funky there this year. But no, they'll play hard. They'll play fast. And I like Ulbrich. I worked with him 1 year with the Falcons too, and he's got energy. I'll say that. He's also the guy that Jim Mora Jr., put his hands on him and just like calmed him down on the sidelines when he was at UCLA, which I'll tweet that picture because that always cracks me up about it. All right, last one here before we take a break. Titans hired their GM, former Chiefs assistant GM, Mike Borgonzi. I think I got that one. Borgonzi. Sorry, all my Italian friends out there. And also hired John Fassel as special teams coordinator. Bones, who has been a kind of a legendary special teams coach in the NFL, and because of the Dallas's mess, was able to hit the market and wasn't on the market long. So Titans hiring a new GM. Matt, thoughts on that?
I just think it's interesting. Like this is the one hire, I think GM wise, that's already happened. I don't think we have any other GM hires. And like nobody's like who nobody seems to care, I think, because mostly it's the Titans, but also like this is the number one, you know, this is the team that's going to pick number one. The Chiefs have a decent bit of free agents that are going to hit the market, and there's at least some thought that he could potentially, you know, court a few guys over there. Not that I think they need to be big spenders. They were big spenders last offseason, and that didn't, you know, didn't really result in a lot of wins. Obviously, they're picking first in the damn draft, but this is a big, it's a big offseason for the Titans. It's a big offseason for Brian Callahan, who I didn't really love year one. So I thought like getting an assistant GM from the Chiefs, and he's been in multiple roles. So that's good to see, like a lot of experience doing different things. That's good. Need that. Because it just seemed like, and I don't know, I mean, is Brian Callahan going to be aligned with the GM? We'll see. That building seems like kind of a mess, but I did think the Fossil hire was at least a kind of a decent get, because like I said, I thought there was a chance that they might just rip that whole thing apart in Tennessee. If like, all right, we're going to fire Rand Carthon, let's go ahead and fire Brian Callahan. But the Titans seem like a mess, like I said. So for Brian Callahan to get Fossil, who a lot of experience, like you said, kind of a legendary coach, they still have Bill Callahan on staff. There's at least something to maybe squint at there, but I do come away pretty discouraged from the 2024 season with this team.
Yeah, there's parts of the season I was like, oh, okay, I like this. And then, yeah, like you said, it just kind of fell apart. Even like their defensive line. As I was looking something up, Vrabel is interviewing Terrell Williams from the Lions as their defense coordinator, reported an hour ago. Well, I didn't even know that. I just kind of threw that name out there. But there Denard Wilson, yeah, Denard Wilson was defense coordinator. I thought that they kind of dropped off a little bit, but they were tough a little bit or for the first half of the season, depending on injuries and stuff. But it is kind of a, they have some of the toughest spots filled. Like they have the offensive line coach, like a legendary offensive line coach. Now they have a legendary special teams coach. I actually think the D coordinator is not bad. So it's like, they got a lot of nice stuff set up here. They, you know, like they got pieces that a lot of teams would really like. They just don't have a quarterback, and we're not sure. And the offense was sloppy. The special teams was atrocious last year. So thank God that's why they went from I don't even have to look it up. I'm going to guess that they're 32nd in DVOA on special teams last year. I could probably guess at least 30th. You know, they're terrible. But now getting a guy that no matter where he's been has had some great fakes when Fossil was the head. Special teams coach with the Rams, they had some great fakes there. Like he's just a guy. He was the first special teams coach I know that wore a headset, which always stood out to me. No special team coaches just not wear headsets. That's something I always believe in. But they got another quarterback. Like you said, they got the number one pick last time they had this. They trade out of it in the Laremy Tunsil gas mask Jared Goff year. I think that maybe they're in the Sam Darnold sweepstakes. Like maybe they've got a lot of options for the new GM to kind of figure out. So Titans are an interesting team. They really are, because they're not, the defense I think could be good. Like they got a good line coach. Like they could, if they nail a quarterback, a lot of teams could say this. It's like they could be at least interesting as opposed to just outright number one pick bad. Like they could be interesting very quickly if they nail the right things.
Is there any of these guys in this draft? And like, I know we've got a long time to talk about this, but I, as you know, I have, and I'm sure you might already be talked out about this. I don't know. I, as you know, I do not pay attention to like prospects or college football during the season at all. But I mean, you've told me this. A lot of people have said it's not supposed to be a good quarterback class. Is there any of these guys that if they took them number one overall, you wouldn't just completely puke on your shoes and, you know, like, just you wouldn't be completely disgusted? Because like, to me, I'm imagining they're gonna take one first overall, because it's just how it goes.
I Cam Ward is the only one I can squint and make an argument for taking in the top 10. But it's like, the thing is, I have him graded kind of equivalent to like JJ McCarthy last year, which is like, oh yeah, I guess I know McCarthy went early, but it was like, you know, that kind of late first, like comfortably, I wouldn't take him till past pick 25, you know, in a normal draft. But that's what this draft is. And quarterbacks are quarterbacks. Quarterbacks, yeah, I want to get him at 25, half round inflation. He ends up in the early teens. No quarterbacks in this class. Well, then you jump up another 10 spots. You know, that's kind of just how it breaks down. That's the only guy. I don't think Shedeur Sanders is one I'd be comfortable taking number one overall, and just where the Titans are at right now, too. But Cam always shows some things, and even someone else said this, which kind of disappoints me. He has some shades of Steve McNair. So like that would maybe sell the Titans fans. Like, hey, we got Steve McNair Jr. here, you know, maybe with that, but he would be the only one. But like for the Titans, I'd be like, I would almost rather sniff Darnold than maybe take a bet on these guys. But that's, it's so, you have to pay Darnold. So like, no matter what you're committing to and not, yeah, they're all leaky life rafts. And then it's just which one you want to hop onto. So yeah, Cam Ward would be the only one I'm really comfortable. And I know quarterbacks are going to get boosted up, but he's the only one. And even that's kind of like a little dicey to me. Have fun with that, anyone that wants to take him. But I'd like them to trade back a little bit and figure it out from there and maybe go down the Darnold path. But again, that's still like scary, you know, because it's Darnold outside of that ecosystem in Minnesota. So that's scary as well. So yeah. Not fun, but he's gonna have some
rosy picture. Good luck, Mike.
He's gonna earn his money next few months. Yeah, I know. At least the owner is very patient.
Totally. So it seems.
Totally. And totally has a lot of long-term vision on a lot of things. We're gonna take one last break, and then we're gonna come back with the remaining openings for head coach spots in the NFL. All right, we are back. And we're going to round up what's kind of little breakdowns, little news roundup of the remaining openings. We're going to start with everybody's favorite team, the Dallas Cowboys. Cowboys, this is getting weird, which I should be shocked. But as of recording, or at least of last night, Brian Schottenheimer is the betting favorite to be the Cowboys' next head coach at -250, which is a pretty heavy favorite there. They've also looked into Kellen Moore, who I want to remind people was the offensive coordinator until they squeezed him out. And then he went to LA, and then now is the Eagles offensive coordinator. And now they might want to interview him for the head coaching spot. But the Cowboys, Matt, thoughts on this process so far and thoughts on the potential Schottenheimer or more hirings?
Well, we can all just officially say that the Deion Sanders news was just a total, that was a marketing scam, baby. And like, for sure, so cool. I will say that with my chest, that was a marketing scam / Deion probably wants, and Coach Prime wants himself a new contract. So yeah. And Jerry wants himself some headlines. We all know that's the deal. It's probably going to be one of these type of hires. The Schottenheimer thing, I don't know, man. Yeah. They're officially going to interview him. I do not think like, let's keep the same offensive terminology is a good enough reason.
No, you know, come
and
on.
It's funny because I do think Schottenheimer, he's done some interesting stuff, like but this was a long time ago that I thought he was like a head coaching candidate potentially. I think he got swept up in the whole Rust stuff that we talked about earlier, which is this, like, well, you have an interesting offense. That's cool. Guess what we're going to do? The Russ offense. Like, and I think he kind of got swept up in that and sort of the whole let Russ cook thing, whatever. But there were times where I thought he was at least doing some interesting things from a Seattle offensive perspective. But like, just like head coaching candidate, I don't know about that. That seems aggressive to me. The Kellen Moore thing, I was, when this Mike McCarthy stuff happened, I was like, I would say 70% confident it's going to be Kellen Moore. I was like, which is like, that's big against the field, but like 70% they were going to go with Kellen Moore. And I still think right now, even though the betting odds and all that, I'm still probably like somewhere between 65 to 70% certain that it's going to be Kellen Moore because, and look, I think Kellen's got some good ideas too. I do think sequencing has been an issue. I think he struggles with just like, hey, these plays are working. Let's do it again and again and again and again and again. I think he's got some issues. Whereas that's the thing that Ben Johnson, like that's what he's really good at is like, oh, this is working. Just let's hit B, 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 B again and again. He's like a gamer, you know? I mean, that's great. But I
spam it.
With Kellen Moore, I do think he's got some good ideas. I think there's some stuff about his offense that's really interesting from like they play with a lot of pace. They play with a lot of motion. Like even just the Eagles offense, it is very similar to what they were doing with Steichen and with Brian Johnson, but just with like a little I don't know, like a reduction sauce on the top. It's the same dish, but just maybe a little bit more pizzazz, like a little flaky salt on the top of the steak, whatever. That's kind of what I would describe the Eagles offense from a pass game perspective as right now. But I also think that it's really difficult to separate Kellen Moore from what just Philadelphia has always been. But I've heard good things about his like leadership. Obviously, he's got familiarity with Dak and stuff like that. So I don't think that's the worst hire in the world. It's a little bit Cowboysy. It's a little bit predictable and just kind of talk about a team that is very insular. Because let's not get it twisted. Like, they wanted Mike McCarthy back, but Mike McCarthy didn't want to agree to their contract terms. So this whole idea that, oh, they were going to fire Mike McCarthy to just hire Kellen Moore, that seems stupid. No. Like, they wanted McCarthy back, and he didn't want to come back under their terms. So that's why they're in this position, which is why they probably, I think they're going to end up going with something familiar, like something with some familiarity. The Schottenheimer thing is just like a little too familiar.
Yeah, that's, and also like, it's not like he's, sometimes you get this where it's like, oh, we got the hotshot coordinator, we got to keep him in house. Like, Schottenheimer's kind of a known quantity for a long, long time. Like, he was getting head coaching rumors when I was in college.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I was playing Madden, and he was like, the Jets offensive coordinator, do you want to hire him as the head coach?
Yep. It was when I was, and that was the big thing. It was like, oh, his work with Sanchez and all that stuff. And yeah, I actually rewatched those offenses because I was doing a little something on the Jets defense. They're like, really? This was getting guys head coaching looks back in the day? They're like under center, I formation on like 3rd and 10 because they didn't trust the quarterback. So I guess that's good. But this feels like when Jason Garrett got hired in the first place. Like, you know, the head coach was fired. He was interim. They just bumped him up. And it was just like, okay, you keep it in house, I guess. And then he was the head coach for years. Does Jerry think he's hiring Marty? I mean, that was my first thought. And then the other thing is too, is that the argument right now is, oh, we don't want them to change terminology. The thing that I always thought was interesting, okay, it was Kellen Moore and then McCarthy had the play calling and the Schottenheimer's in there. It became kind of a hybrid offense where they were calling it like the Gulf Coast offense
or something,
Texas Coast, okay, as opposed to West Coast. And that offense,
we're not sure what the Gulf is called anymore either, by the way.
Oh, so that's right. Yeah, yes.
We're not sure what we call that anymore, but they were calling it the Texas Coast offense. And I remember I can't remember which broadcaster just I was hammering it during one of the Cowboys. Like, I think it was probably Collinsworth. It sounds like a Collinsworth thing to talk about. to hammer it. One point. And I'm not even saying it was a bad point, but, you know, Dak was very specific about, man, I've never played an offense before where everything's tied together. The routes to my drops and things like that, which seems a little bit like, yeah, the last guy wasn't doing anything. The guy that you're pushing, that you pushed out to now maybe hire again. Very weird.
And that's what I was going to say too, is that the lot, just like we were just talking about, like Burrow and I was talking about Hurts, Dak likes certain routes and likes certain concepts. Like, they run, like McCarthy runs now or did run stuff with Dak and Schottenheimer that was not stuff he was running in Green Bay. I mean, because that's what Rodgers wanted to run. Slant flat was always the joke. Ha-ha. But then it got to the Cowboys, and I would say 80% of the offense remained the same. And there's a couple quick game stuff that, you know, and I'm sure some other designs that they threw in there. But there's a lot of red zone concepts and everything they run. And why I recognize it was because Dak's first coordinator, Scott Linehan, and Bill Callahan, they had kind of like a hot, weird thing going on. One was play caller, and then he got demoted, but then a promotion too. That was Callahan. So then they had an OC as well. And then they had Jason Garrett as the head coach. And then they brought in Linehan just to call plays, and they gave him like a special title. This that offense was Linehan's offense back when he was in Minnesota with my dad. And so I recognize a lot of the things they do. So I kind of chuckle to myself that Dak's preference for offense is the offense I grew up in. And a lot of times I want to be like, Dak, that doesn't work anymore. Like, you gotta expand this. This worked in 2008 and 2014. But now, like you said, when you're charting, everybody was running cover three. Everybody. It was the same fronts every week. And then now it's like, well, now it's mixing up and those plays don't work anymore. But that's when he was in 2016, they were working. Not just saying that's all of it, but I just think it is funny that he's like, oh, I don't want to change the terminology. It's like, it's going to be your offense anyways, bud. You know, yeah. It's going to be, when it's gonna, no matter what, that offense is going to be revolve around what you want, because it always has been that way anyway. So just think that's funny.
I would say the one wrinkle that Kellen Moore does that, you're right, it's so Linehan and like just kind of a little old, but it feels very similar where now, again, it's the same old stuff, but with a little bit of a reduction sauce that you're not even sure if it really adds anything to the dish. Yep. You sprinkled some parsley on it. Whoop-de-doo. You made it look better for Instagram. I don't really know if it did anything. That's kind of what I think the Kellen Moore offense could be sometimes, but it was previously the Linehan with the reduction sauce. Now it's like the Steichen with the reduction sauce there in Philadelphia. But at least, like, I think that there was a lot of good stuff with CeeDee Lamb, even in the previous offense before, mm-hmm. before McCarthy got in there. And I think like you kind of need that guy for that little, some of the extra wrinkles to make sense. So to me, I think the Kellen Moore hire is like a B minus, but, or you're shooting for like B minus at best, but that might be the best you can do at this point. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what they want anyways. That's yeah, I don't know. They're Dallas. We'll move on now to the Jets, who just had a second interview with Aaron Glenn. They've interviewed about 40 people. My phone has not been ringing, so they haven't interviewed me. They haven't interviewed you, I don't think. They haven't interviewed Andy yet, I don't think. But the Jets, Glenn, everything. You have any thoughts on their situation right now? For me, it's kind of wait and see because it seems like they're casting such a wide net.
Yeah, I mean, the reporting, at least from Ian Rapoport this morning, was that the, you know, very much like the deal isn't done. Some particulars still to discuss, but if all goes well, he could be the head coach of the Jets if like today, by the end of today. So honestly, by the time this pod is out, maybe he is the head coach of the Jets. But I think this one makes some sense. You know, I know mm-hmm. that he's gonna there's probably gonna be some level of fans like, oh, what? Come on, we just did the defensive coordinator. We almost always, it seems like we always do the defensive coordinator. You know, whether it's Mangini, whether it's Rex Ryan, yeah. it's Robert Saleh. Yep. Now we're doing the defensive coordinator
Herm
again.
Edwards. But, I mean, it's
yeah,
just
like, right. I mean, the list goes back. On and on and on and on. yeah, right. But at the same time, I do think that I think Aaron Glenn seems like a great head coaching candidate, and he seems like somebody that like got number one thing you want to, as a coach. Do you get the most out of your talent? And I think, look, things ended poorly in Detroit on the last game, but you're never as bad as your worst game, and you're never as good as your best game. And the best example of that is the coach that beat this Detroit Lions team. Dan Quinn's defense got fried by the Green Bay Packers in that playoff game last year.
Yes.
And obviously his team's in the damn NFC championship game this year. So that doesn't mean everything. Like, I know that's going to be the talking point if Aaron Glenn gets his job. Like, look at what that defense just did, but it's, that doesn't matter to me. I think over the course of the season, he consistently showed like I can get the most out of the talent on this roster and playing in a specific way that I think makes it really hard on quarterbacks. Like, if you're going to be in this division with Josh Allen and maybe Drake May becomes one of those guys, and even an offense in Miami that when all those guys are like, it's humming when Tua's mm-hmm. back there and stuff like that. Yeah, let's make it hard on those players. Let's play man coverage. Let's be fearless. Like Dolphins offense, the times that they have struggled when everybody's been healthy is when you press the shit out of the receivers and you beat them up and you make Tua think that extra second, which is certainly this style of defense that I think is just a treat to watch. I'm high on Glenn. I think this would be a good hire if the Jets can land the plane here. And if not, if they don't get him to stick and sign a deal, I would imagine that the Saints are going to try to get in on this too.
And maybe I just lack vision sometimes too. I love personality coaches and ones that I think are getting the most out of their players. The thing with those Lions defenses the last couple of years, I was like, well, they've been pretty bad though. It's like, I like the personality and everything. This year it was finally, there's proof in the pudding. They're like, you know, oh, okay, what you're doing is working. Oh, and you guys got hurt. How do you answer when you guys got hurt? Oh, you had some new ideas there. Oh, and the guys are playing really hard again. Okay, you're checking again. This is such an inexact science. We only know so much on the outside, but those are boxes that you want to see checked by these candidates. And Glenn has checked them for me, and I've become more high on him as a candidate at a lot of places. Like at first, I was just like, oh, this, yeah, you'd make sense here, but he turned into, along with Johnson, you know, OC and Vrabel, like one of the top candidates in my brain. And I think it's a lot of that personality. And I think teams are realizing, hey, it's a war of attrition. Yeah, we need a quarterback. We also need coaches that get our guys right when it's a backup, when it's an undrafted free agent, when it's a practice squad guy. Can they get these guys right? And all the best coaches seem to do it. This is, I know we talk about Kyle Shanahan now in 2025 and how many, you know, he's basically Andy Reid Jr. at this point. But his first year in San Fran, when they had on that roster, how hard and how detailed those guys were playing stood out to me so much. And I was bullish on Shanahan anyways, but that was where I was like, this is going to be good. And that's a part of it. That is just such a part of it. How hard you get these guys to play. And after they've been through in New York, maybe that personality shift, and Saleh gets guys to play hard too, but I think Glenn can kind of rejuvenate that and get that back after they just kind of went through a season of hell.
There's really some guys that need it too, right? Like Sauce, I think obviously Sauce took a step back this year, and was very, all right, I'm not tackling all any right. of that stuff. Like, nope. Yeah, and he's a corner that I think, like, again, the Robert Saleh stuff, like, in, I think Saleh is a really good coach, but, you know, sometimes it's like relationships, man, you know, like it's good for this time, and then you need something else to take you the distance or whatever. And I think Aaron Glenn actually, you know, motivating a guy like Sauce and be like, hey, no more of this cover three. You're doing just the, like, protect the boundary stuff. You're going to get in these guys' faces, and you're going to shadow players and stuff like that. That's actually really exciting to consider. So it's not final, but I do think if they can land Glenn, that seems like a pretty decent coup for a team that is the butt of, like, every joke right now. So obviously got to get the offensive coordinator hire, stuff like that, right? That's where I think, you know, Tanner Engstrand or Mark Brunell or Hank Fraley or any of these guys could end up becoming, you know, getting plucked off this Lions tree left and right. But it's I kind of like this hire.
Yeah, I do too. Now moving on to the Jags. Jags were kind of in the Ben Johnson sweepstakes. They lost that one. I think they have a Trent Baalke size alarm bell hanging over, or cloud, I should say, a Baalke size cloud hanging over this organization right now. It seems like Liam Cohn is the leader in the clubhouse. They've interviewed Robert Saleh. They've interviewed a whole bunch of names. Patrick Graham, they interviewed. But they really seem, when they go offense, they want to have somebody to nurture and mentor Trevor Lawrence and get that offense really clicking, which you and I have become very bullish on Liam Cohn. I think you were one of the first people go like, hey, I think this is real, what they're doing in Tampa. And it kind of was like, and it was just kept going and going and going. He's really earned a lot of my respect, I think, as well this year. I watched the Kentucky offense playing calling, but it was like, it's so hard to gauge that when the Kentucky offensive line was basically Vlade Divac just taking charges one after another. But no.
How many ways can we get Wandale Robinson the ball or whatever?
Oh, God.
I don't even know if that was charted the same year, but whatever.
No, it was. It was. It was. And they're trying to run the Rams, like, bunch of jet motion stuff. And it was like, God, this is a lot better with Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods.
Yeah, there's no receivers
and
Goff
and Stafford throwing. Yeah, I don't like this as much with this clientele. But no, Liam Cohn seems like the name. And I think that's just, I would like it because he's interesting. I'd be curious again who he brings in as defense coordinator. I brought up that name, Patrick Graham. I feel like he should be getting interviews everywhere for defense coordinator spots. That'd be, if I were a new head coach, that'd be a name I'd be calling. Maybe Vrabel brings him in because he has some Patriots background too. Any thoughts on the Jags opening and thoughts on Cohn maybe going there?
Yeah, I mean, definitely I second your thoughts on Patrick Graham, who I've always been high on as a defensive coordinator. Does a lot, like, gets another guy that I think gets the most out of his players and also puts a lot of stress on you from a coverage perspective. And that has been apparent for a minute now. Like, and he's been the defensive coordinator on some bad teams, but it's one of these, like, you know, they're doing some interesting stuff over there. Yep. And even if they've got, like, guys
been
playing
talking
hard
about him for like 5 years now, I feel like.
Yeah, it's been a minute. So I'd actually really like to see him land in a good opportunity with some talent. That would be nice.
Agreed.
But from a Liam Cohen perspective, you know, obviously I think there's some talent to work with on that side of the ball. Brian Thomas Jr., Trevor Lawrence. Certainly, like, they're a run game that needs a revival, very similar to Tampa, where I'm not sure the backs are bad, but I don't think the run game has been, I mean, the run game in Jacksonville has been a nightmare under Peterson. Like, as much as I think got the pass game got the attention, and like Calvin Ridley and the weird deployment the previous year, and Trevor Lawrence, we got to have the Trevor Lawrence conversation. Like, we got to have a conversation about what they're doing from a run game perspective and how it doesn't at all fit the running backs. So I think that would be interesting, obviously, considering with what Cohen did in Tampa Bay last year, got the most out of Bucky Irvin, got even more out of Rashad White than the previous staff. But certainly, Brian Thomas Jr. being deployed in all these very creative ways and, like, potentially some plays with motion, stuff like that. That's exciting. But obviously Cohen's another guy. Good offensive coordinator, good play caller. Tampa Bay really is going to be in a tough spot if they lose him. Just curious about, you know, what staff is he going to put together? What is he going to be like on game day? And let me ask you, Nate, who would you rather, if you just, knowing what you know, who would you rather hire, like, as a head coach, Liam Cohen or Joe Brady?
Cohen, I think. Because Cohen has shown me at least that he does it maybe with less than ideal stuff. And Brady's play calling has been good with Josh Allen and Joe Burrow. It kind of, like, I want to see your back quarterback. Is that fair? Because the Bucs have a lot of help too, at least this year. They have plenty of receiving talent. I just thought all the changes that got made throughout the year this year with the Bucs, like, really spoke to what Cohen's doing. Like, everything they did made sense to me. And not to say that the Bills didn't. Brady's sometimes too, I just don't know I don't know with him because it's everything's very streamlined. And it's like, how much do I credit the offensive line coach? You know, because that's been the sexiest thing for the Bills for me this year. I think the passing game is fine. It's very streamlined. And I just think the run game has been more exciting. And it's like, yeah, credit to Brady for not overthinking it. I think that's one of the things I like about Joe Brady's willing to pound it. But I think the offensive line coach has been more like should be getting more praise, I guess, in a way. Is that fair for him being as a head coach? He's another Sean Payton guy. I'm bullish on Sean Payton guys, so I don't know. But I think what Cohen did this last year is just so impressive. And I maybe it just maybe that's maybe blinding me a little bit.
I'm a little higher on – I actually think I might pick Brady as high as I am on Liam Cohen. I think I might like Brady as a head coach a little bit more, so maybe some of the Saints' influence. And I mean, if you look at the Carolina years, especially the year with Teddy Bridgewater, like that was actually a really good offense, and I thought players were interestingly deployed, not perfect, but interestingly deployed in that offense. And I do love how he has just been willing to, okay, like this is working, I'm going to spam this. And I think actually with the players on the roster, from a pass game perspective only – I do actually think that might be a little more interesting in Jacksonville, but it sounds like it's going to come down to Cohen or Robert Saleh or Patrick Graham.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not to knock Brady. I think he deserves a head coaching job soon. It's just like, I don't know. I maybe just can't get over the top with him. I will say, when you're talking about streamlining, that Carolina offense, when Darnold had his really good 3 weeks that one year, all they ran was routes that Darnold was good at or good at throwing. And they ran like 500 choice routes to Christian McCaffrey.
Yeah.
But just talk about streamlining the offense. Yeah. They're like, hey, this is our best player. Darnold's good at it. I'm just going to run it. And then he ran like a bunch of bootlegs and stuff. Like,
in breakers to DJ Moore. Slants from the slot that he's booting on the same or like drags from the slot. He's booting on the same side or choice routes to CMC. And that was
choice routes.
Quite literally it.
And again, that's a credit to a coach putting those guys in winning positions and what they're good at. But it's like you only can take so much. You just don't know until they're exposed. But no, I don't want to come across as low on Brady or anything. I still am high. And actually, this year has really been like he figures it out and he's done good jobs several places. So Raiders missed out. Ben Johnson, apparently. They have a lot to figure out. Who's playing quarterback for them is pretty good. But also, any thoughts on the Raiders opening? I can't remember who was like their top candidates at this point.
Yeah, some of the chatter I've heard is that it might end up like Pete Carroll might be their second choice, which is a hell of an over. I don't know if it's an overcorrection, but it's a hell of a reversal from Ben Johnson to Pete Carroll. I think that is like the complete opposite. Obviously, known quantity, older guy, program builder, and maybe they would want to do, just from what I've heard, is maybe they'd want to have a Pete Carroll type and then like a somebody he's grooming. I don't know who the hell that would be or whatever. Schottenheimer reuniting with Pete Carroll in Las Vegas. I don't know, but I can see, just because, man, I do think that is just, now that the Ben Johnson thing's not going to happen and you don't have to do the, hey, well, look at what Kyle Shanahan took over in San Francisco. There wasn't really anything going on there. Complete blank slate, whatever. That might be what Ben Johnson wants. Now I'm just back to, hey, it's blank slate. So maybe a Pete Carroll type, let's build a program here, maybe that's what they need. But that's the only kind of like rumor I've heard.
I it's just like they're trying to interview some like Vance Joseph, it looks like Saleh, of course, getting interviews, but it's never one. I don't know, it's, I'm curious where they go. And the Raiders are always just in their own category because they could do anything, and I'd be like, yeah, that makes sense. Antonio Pierce, yeah, sure, why not, you know? Yeah, we're going to bring Gruden out of retirement. Yeah, sure. Why not? Like, they could just do anything, and I'd be like, yeah. Archell.
Isn't it crazy that last year, like, they hire Antonio Pierce because Max Crosby wants it. Now Max Crosby's on Good Morning Football saying, you know, when I was there, those guys were great when I was there. And then it's like, oh, yeah, let's get Luke Getsy. He's got familiarity with Davante Adams, currently plays for the New York Jets and will never play probably another snap for those guys. So, yeah, it's just everything of the last 365 days kind of just feels, other than drafting Brock Bowers, kind of feels like a waste of time for the Raiders.
Yeah, last year's class was okay. I will say that. They nailed some guys. They have like a nose tackle they picked up from the Colts I really like too. I want to give him a shout before we move on. But no, who they pick up, because the Colts could use him. Jonah Lalu. He was a seventh rounder the Colts cut, and he's actually like looks good. I was like, how did that happen? But anyways, Raiders are just kind of a weird situation. I could see him doing a lot. Maybe Brady really does do a lot to kind of streamline, make it a clean operation, but that's going to take time. And who they hire is going to be interesting. Last one, last opening, Saints. New Orleans is dealing with a blizzard. People are skiing on Bourbon Street right now. And that's actually hindered their interview process because they can't bring anyone for in-person interviews. But they have interviewed Aaron Glenn, who we've talked about, Anthony Weaver, Mike Kafka, who's offensive coordinator for the Giants, which is, he's been getting interviews for years now. I'm sure someday he'll get one. But I know a lot of people are bullish on him. But this is the one we'll close out on. What are your thoughts on the Saints opening and latest rumors for them?
Yeah, and obviously there's Mike McCarthy kind of hanging over all this, too. Well, he's got familiarity with Mickey Loomis.
Charles Robinson, that was his bet, was McCarthy would end up in New Orleans. So,
yep, I would guess that if they can't land Aaron Glenn, if Glenn never leaves New York and he becomes the head coach, I would guess that, yeah, okay, they've got these second interviews with Kafka, Weaver, whatever. My guess is they end up with McCarthy, which, sure, I mean, again, whatever. Mike McCarthy's got a great record. He's probably going to get you to respectability. I know Alvin Kamara tweeted out today that his pick for head coach, or his vote for head coach, rhymes with Fizzy. So he obviously wants Darren Rizzi to stick as a head coach, which I imagine everybody that's making decisions for the Saints is. Thank you, Alvin. Appreciate the input. We're going to keep on. We're going to not do that.
We appreciate your input. Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you for your input.
We're going to enjoy that money on the fridge, all next to all the other ones.
Yeah. You just keep looking at that. The paychecks rolling in over there, Alvin, because we just gave you a lot of money, but not to pick head coaches here, because he's going to go be the special teams coordinator in Chicago. Yeah, McCarthy, it would just be whatever, I guess. Sure. But in terms of like Mike Kafka, he's definitely an interesting candidate and somebody I've had my eye on for a while, because, and I almost kind of think he needs to get out of, him and Daboll maybe need to get away from each other, because I thought agree. It was like an interesting pairing. Like, oh, Daboll clearly wants to, like what I said about Raheem Morris, be a little more hands off the offense, actually mm-hmm. be the head coach, let Mike Kafka call plays. And in 2022, things went well, actually, mm-hmm. with that setup. And I think they got some decent stuff out of Daniel Jones, and like they had some interesting ideas, and I thought their worlds blending, like the very spread world of Brian Daboll and kind of the Andy Reid tree influence with Kafka, was very fascinating mm-hmm. in 2022. And then like the second things went wrong in 2023, Daboll's like, nope, I want that offense back, which is so predictable. The odds on that was minus whatever. So yeah, I think Kafka though would be an interesting candidate if he can get out of New York.
Yep. I've heard good things. I've never met him. I remember when he was at Northwestern. But I will say that what I've heard in that year in 2022 stood out to me, because again, it was just like we were talking about with Joe Brady in that Carolina time with Darnold. Everything was streamlined. They're like, okay, we're good at these three routes and three concepts. Okay, let's just call them 100 times. And I like that sometimes when you're just like, hey, this is all we can do and we're good at it. We'll figure out ways to get to it. I agree that I think he has to get out of New York some way, shape, or form, because like it was, oh, things are good, Dable goes, I call plays. Oh, things were bad, I wasn't calling plays. Like, or I would, when it was just always a shell game of who was calling. And then I saw breakdowns of like whose mic was covering at what time to call the plays from Giants fans. So Giants fans have been going through it.
I was gonna say, that's when you know things are going really well, when your fans are trying to break down like whose mouth is covered and who's calling plays. That's the sign of a healthy franchise.
Justin Penick from he does John Boy stuff, but that was the one that broke it down. And it was, I watched the whole video and I was like, man, this is a detailed breakdown for who's calling plays. But that's where they're going through right now. So yeah, the Saints, again, are a weird situation. Mickey Loomis is not going anywhere at GM. He's literally in Tom Benson's old will. So they have to have some comfort with working with Mickey and what they're going through in New Orleans right now with Derek Carr, quarterback. There's just a lot of variables with New Orleans. There's a lot of variables with all these teams, but especially with New Orleans right now. And just snow to top it all off. But we're going to be closing it out today. That was fun. A little coaching carousel wrap up. Almost felt like a college show. We got quarterback transfers to cover as well. But no, we'll be closing it out today. Charles and I will be back on Thursday to preview the conference championship games. God, final two games before the Super Bowl. Pro Bowl doesn't count anymore. So yeah, final two games. We'll be previewing deep dives. And I am Nate Tice. You can find me at Nate_Tice or Nate Tice on Blue Sky. Matt, where can they find you? What are you working on this week outside of coming on to Football 301?
Yeah, you can find me at Matt_Harmon_BYB, strictly on X, not on Blue Sky. No problem with Blue Sky. It's just the thought of another social media platform is
it's I've toned it down on Blue Sky because it's like, this is exhausting. I can't double post everything.
Yeah, I know. That's I can't do it either. We got to pick one. And I know that's a charged conversation, but we got to pick one. Anyways, so you can find me on X. And in terms of content, last week did the Terry McLaurin breakdown. This week I'm going to do something similar with Saquon Barkley, kind of a little bit of a mix of a fantasy slash reality article of like, how did we, I think, kind of sleep on this sleeping giant situation. Especially coming off the game last week, I think that's going to be fun to write about.
Yeah, sleeping former giant. No, that's great.
Oh, there you go. What an idiot. I missed that one.
No, check that out. I love these breakdowns too, because like you said, you're mixing your fantasy angles, but then you're kind of dropping in like, hey, this is the ramifications or how's it tie in. So love your stuff, Matt. So make sure you guys check that out as well. Also send in mailbag questions. Just send it into football301mailbag@yahoosports.com or leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and jump the line. You know, quick pass, which is like 40 deep at Disneyland right now, I've heard. I'm not going to find out Disney World or Disneyland for years. My kids actually have to remember it for me to take them there. It's before I deal with those amusement parks or resorts. But anyways, no one cares. Subscribe to us, follow us, rate us 5 stars, or watch us on YouTube on the Yahoo Sports YouTube channel. Thanks to Stone and Madison behind the scenes. Thank you to you, Matt, for joining me. Thank you to all of you for listening. See you guys next time.